to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, hitting firewalled hoe. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. To CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, zip 6.
Hello, and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 173. Today's date? November 14th, 2006. I'm Black Ratchet, and with me this week is Kyle L.
Hey.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe you've never been on an episode before, have you?
No, I haven't. Never.
Oh, see, look at that. Popping your cherry, right. Jiggy jiggity. Strom would probably thoroughly enjoy that more, but we're not.
Oh, dude, you didn't have to go there.
Oh, cool. I mean, it's just it was there. You know, it's too tempting of a target. Huh, you know, Strom's not here. I wonder how many people actually miss Strom. Nothing against him, but.
Well, hey, man, I like him. He's a cool guy.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. I'm curious how many people are like, you know, bring back Strom. I've had a couple of, like, you know, emails into the mailbag going, you know, oh, I'm glad you're back. I wonder where you went. Like that Vector guy last week. But
yeah, I heard that. I just listened to that, actually. Yeah.
No, that still blew my mind. There was a couple other ones in there that I just didn't make the air. But. No love for Strom. I'm shocked and dismayed.
So he's never gotten any emails like that you know of?
The first week we took over the show, everyone was like, hey, you know, congratulations, blah, 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 blah. But, like, you know, I was expecting at least one or two people to mention, like, the lack of Strom when I took it back over again, but, yeah, I don't know.
So you took back over the show, huh?
I guess that's kind of like official now. I've taken over for the time being. I'm not sure how long I'll be taking it over, but I'm back.
Well, that's good, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
I enjoyed you, but I can't say that I didn't enjoy Stank more. He was always fun to listen to.
I gotta say, I think Stank does a much better job than I do, because he's just, I mean, I'm insane, but just like Stank, he ratchets up the insanity up to a new level.
Oh, yeah, he's always cursing at something.
Yeah, geez, he's like, you know, straitjacket and Bellevue type crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think we have any housekeeping this week. So, do you have anything for housekeeping this week?
Not really, no.
I didn't think so, but okay. Want to go into email?
Sure.
All right. Okay, our first email this week is from, actually, we don't have a name on this one, and it remains anonymous, so I don't know, what do we call it? We'll call him Joe. And Joe writes, this is related to the hacker definition by the listen submission, by the listener submission, a.k.a. Thunderstruck. Boy, that sentence made no sense. This is related to the hacker definition of the listener submission of the person named Thunderstruck. I have to agree with Binrev's definition. He says using someone else's script, exploit, etc. is not hacking. But did that person also build the computer they are using for the exploit? Did they write the protocols on the internet that they are using? So basically you get my point. Where do we draw the line? The mindset definition is something abstract enough that applies to all the aspects of hacking in the general form from beginning into the future. Besides, the real definition of a hacker is someone who plays golf poorly. Just kidding. Peace, can keep up the great show, gets me through boring-ass days at work. From Joe, or something. Someone who plays golf poorly actually rings a bell for me, but I don't get the joke, do you?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
I don't really get that email. I don't really agree with that.
Oh, what's your opinion on it?
Well, to me, a hacker's pretty much anybody who does anything with computers, really. I mean, that's kind of a vague view of it, but I don't really see that as being anything.
Well, I mean, what Stank's definition was, it was along the lines of the whole, it was just like a mentality of it. I mean, technically, I mean, I think it's more along your lines than you actually think, because it was along the, he comes out and basically says, you know, if for example, who was it? I think it was Laszlo that actually came up with this that I heard. And he came out with, along the lines of, you know, if you're, you know, you're trying to, you visit a dirty website and you're trying to keep it from your girlfriend, you know, and you're trying to figure that out. You're a hacker. You just won't admit it. And, yeah, I think that is. You're just trying to work around the system and try to figure it out with a computer. And it's not as much, I mean, you could even have hackers who aren't into computers.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it's the mindset. It's a natural curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, my rule of thumb between, you know, the skiddy and the not skiddy type things is, I mean, you have to understand the underlying concepts at hand when you're using an exploit. I mean, who was it? Larry Wall, the guy who wrote Perl, says, like, it was like laziness and sloth are like two key points to a programmer. It was like hubris, laziness, sloth, and something else.
Sounds
and,
about right.
Yeah, I mean, like, and when you're using someone else's exploit, that's what it boils down to. I mean, you're just laziness. Well, I mean, why invent a real twice? I mean, there's a major difference. I mean, there's really a major difference, though, when you say, you know, this tool, you're looking at something, okay, this exploit breaks Apache. And, you know, and then you have someone else says, okay, you know, this exploit affects Apache between, you know, 1.3.1.9 and 1.3.2.2. And it, you know, there's a buffer overflow in the error handling code that allows me to gain privileges as the web server user. I mean, as long as you understand what the hell's going on, I mean, I really don't consider it more of a skiddy.
Right, exactly. I mean,
yeah.
Definitely. Why reinvent the wheel?
Exactly.
That's something all of us do, anybody who does that type of hacking. So, I mean, you got to look at what's out there and everything. And if you're into security and stuff, you definitely have to look at that stuff. And it's always fun to see what it does and if it works in your system or not.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even like getting beyond hacking, I mean, it's just not, like I said, it's just not computers, and it's,
right,
I mean,
exactly.
Look at all the people, I mean, where hacking got its start was the Tech Model Railroad Club on MIT, and they're still going strong. It's a bunch of, I mean, there's computer geeks out there, but there's also railroad geeks who are just trying to really make a fully functional and, you know, accurate railroad operation, that, and they're railroad hackers. I mean, that's what you got to look at.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
The term is computer hack. The computer term, the computer portion of the term computer hacker, you know, is actually a qualifier. So
yeah.
We'll just leave it at that. We'll probably get some hate mail for that, but whatever. Yeah. Bring it on. No. Who's our next email from? Our next email is from Colonel Panic.
Oh, no.
Yeah, see, he's actually in the IRC channel. I think. So we'll send shouts out to him at the end. I don't know. Hey guys, love the show. I've only been listening for about 2 months, and I'm already hooked. I have a video to share that ties into episode 172 about hacking and voting machines. It's a YouTube created by some Princeton University computer science students that demonstrates how easily this fraud can be accomplished. They use the same technique that StankDog mentioned in MinRef 172, using malware injected via the memory card to sidestep the machine's internal error testing routine, then go on to falsify the actual election results. After the election end, the malware deletes itself, leaving no trace. The Princeton team even went a step further and created a mobile virus that can migrate through a network from one voting machine to another, stealing votes on those machines as well. Here's a tiny URL that points to the video. Any tiny URL for us? It's tinyurl.com/Yankee2, Yankee Quebec Golf 2. Again, you guys do an interesting show. Keep up the good work. Colonel Panic. A.K.A. My name is URL. I think they're trying to like say like my name is Earl. I finally get it. I've seen him say that before. but I had no clue what actually it meant until just now.
Huh, I still don't get it. What's up, man?
Isn't that like a TV show, My Name is Earl?
Oh, I don't know. I don't follow TV too much.
Neither really. I don't watch it, but I think I've seen, like, promotions for it or something. I don't know. Anyway, the video. Did you see the video?
I did. That was quite interesting.
That was good for them.
Yeah, definitely.
That's great. I mean, I personally, after looking at that, I still stick to my original opinion that I think there's a lot of money out there for someone who can design a secure system that's idiot-proof, that,
mm-hmm.
you know, isn't susceptible to malware and everything. I mean, definitely. Why not just have it as like a ROM or something, or just, you know, that's what the operating system is. You have a little chip right on the board, and that's it. You have to,
exactly.
Do 15 security checks and rip the entire machine off to get to that ROM chip. I mean, it's simple.
Right, exactly. Like they showed in the video, you can just take a couple of screws off and get right to that.
Yeah, I mean,
without even picking the lock, you know? That's crazy.
Stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like we said last week. And actually, we're going to go. Stank Dog, I think, kind of wants to apologize for last week, because he says we were talking toward the end, and he's. We were talking after the show, and he said toward the end afterwards we were kind of veering into a more political slant. And if anyone felt that way, he wants to apologize. And I will apologize as well. I personally think that we didn't actually cross the line. We just had a couple of one-liners here and there.
Hold on, a political slant?
Well, we were knocking Democratic. And I, for example, made fun of Al Gore. He's Al Gore. I mean, you got to do that.
Yeah, going to turn the show into one of them 2600 shows.
Yeah, I know. It's gonna be off the bin rev with Stank and Black Ratchet.
Yeah.
So, anyway, if anyone feels that way, try if you want, just drop me a line and yell at us. If you want to send us hate mail, it's radio@binrev.com. So, I mean, we're not gonna make fun of you, but I'm curious how people actually thought of that, because it was a very different subject matter for what we usually cover.
Yeah, I didn't get to the end of that episode. You kind of interrupted me with having to record this episode, so I'll probably go back and listen to that.
Well, see, that's why you should listen to the episode immediately after it comes out. It was posted. When was it posted? I think I posted it Tuesday night, because I was up. Yeah, I posted it Tuesday night because I was up late watching the election results.
Tuesday night. Wow, that's quick.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so doomed, and I'm setting the bar way too high for me, because like the past two times, like I set it up Wednesday morning, the first episode that I did, and then then last week I did it Tuesday night. So people are going to get like greedy and wondering why the heck I'm taking so long if I wait till like Thursday or something or Wednesday afternoon. Whew. Our next email is from Fear. Hey, Stank Dog. This is a late response to episode 170. I just wanted to say that you are totally right about how Macs are not worth the price. Though I think Macs aren't worth anything, period, because of their inferior operating system and their failure to grasp the concept of the right-click button on a mouse, and usually the poor hardware and all that jazz. Keep up the good show, Fear. Well, that sounds like a person that's never really given a Mac a fair shake.
Yeah.
What's your opinion of Macs? Because I actually don't know those.
You know, actually, I've never used a Mac, really. I mean, I've used them in schools a little bit, but as far as personal use, never really touched them. I don't have anything against them at all. It's just I don't have the experience with them.
Well, that's a good opinion. That's okay, an opinion to have. If you, there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't know, but...
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's nothing I've been exposed to and nothing I went out of my way to get at, you know. I've been going to install OS X in VMware. Check it out a little bit, but never got around to it.
Like I said a couple episodes ago, I still want to install OS X.
Yeah.
On my laptop, but
so
maybe when I get like $150 of spare cash and I don't have anything else to spend it on, which will happen sometime around 30-50, I think. getting back to Fear's complaints about the inferior operating system, I think Mac OS is a pretty nice system, and I think Macs are generally okay. I mean, I'm not, elevating up to a high level status, but I'm not a zealot. But I mean, if I have a choice of getting a PC or a Mac, they both had comparable specs. I'd have to think about it for a while. I mean, you know, it's yes, it's a Mac. Yes, it'll probably be more expensive, but whatever. I mean, especially with Vista coming down the tube soon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, for example, we were at 2600, and Jason Scott was just talking to somebody, and I was just listening to their conversation, and he said, well, I think Vista is actually going to finally convince me to buy a Mac, and yeah, which really just shocked me, because he was Windows.
Yeah, so you don't like Vista then yourself, or what?
I think that it's going to be, they're despite all their rollbacks, I still think they're trying to push it out the door with it, you know, half-baked.
Oh, definitely.
And, you know, all the, what do they say, like, you have, like, you know, three separate installs before you have to start calling India to reinstall it? I mean, hell, that'll get me through about, like, you know, maybe a year, maybe two, the way I go through installs.
Yeah, I reinstall about every 6 months myself.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, look at this new beta. Oh, crap. Why is my computer starting up again? General protection fault.
Man, I haven't had one of those in a long time.
Yeah, me neither, but I'm just saying.
I know.
Well, I mean, a lot of people have GPS now. They just don't call them general protection faults. They just have that, you know, this thing is performing a legal operation and will be shut down, you know.
True, very true, yeah.
Or if you have, like, Visual Studio involved, said, oh, you know, Firefox crashed. Do you want to debug it? Which actually is happening a lot more now, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah?
Ever since 2.0 came out, like, I think I need to reinstall my XP box anyway, because it's,
mm-hmm.
I tried to upgrade to Vista on it, and it failed miserably, and up until I, like, and then, like, something else happened, so, for example, my NT loader is dead, and I, like, I followed every, I mean, I said, oh, okay, my NT loader is dead, I'll copy it from a, you know, a new computer, you know, I know all the files copy over, I copy them over, I made all the permissions correct,
it won't work.
Yeah, okay, well.
Did you try Fixboot?
Yeah, and then I tried that a couple different times, and I tried, you know, copy different files and make sure I got everything right, and then I tried Fixboot, and Fixboot overwrites the master boot record, so technically it blew grub off, but it still gave me the NT loader issue, and I was like,
shitty.
Yeah, so I got this, like, I basically burnt the CD that this guy had online that's like, you know, fix NT loader, and, like, that boots it up fine. I just have to have it. I'm like, I'm old school here. I'm like back in, like, Mac OS, I have to have a disk in my drive. not Mac OS, Apple OS. My Apple II.
Your Apple II, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't messed with Macs too much myself. It's something I kind of regret, you know? But I love the limited experience I have, like Apple Key C to do the little copyright sign and stuff. It's cool. It's cool. They put thought into it.
They do a very good job designing stuff for usability. They do a very good job with the usability thing. The problem is they kind of, even now with, like, you know, you have a shell prompt and everything, they're still, you're very still, very much insulated from certain features that you have to, like, you know, you have to fool the Mac into thinking you're doing something else and then fake them out and run the other way and try to, you know, do whatever you want to do before it figures it out. And actually, this is a pet peeve, so I am going to bring this up here. Ever since Mac OS X, my two-button mouse, and actually I think up to, like, you know, a five-button mouse, has been supported by Mac OS by default. That just you need to plug a two-button mouse in.
Hmm.
Like, yeah, no, I had, like, I thought it was, like, the whole thing, because it was driving me nuts with the whole single-button mouse, cause, and also the fact that the mouse cost $25. But anyway...
Well, did the applications respond to more than one button on a mouse? Most of them?
Oh, yeah. Like, a lot of the applications did. Like, I can right-click everything in a new little menu pop up, and I can – it's actually a lot like Windows. Like, I think it's – I'm not going to say this. Well, I'll say it, but I'll preface it with, and I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's a lot like Windows where you can, you know, right-click, like, an icon, and it'll bring up the – you can bring up the properties menu on it and, you know, see the shortcut.
Yeah.
I think you can right-click your desktop, and you can bring up your wallpaper settings and all that wonderful stuff.
Well, that's good, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see, who's our next email from? Oh, Yotch? I don't know how to pronounce this. He's written us a couple of times, and I think I've always had this issue. What's up, BinRev crew? How do you feel being the BinRev crew?
Me?
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
We got our own crew there. We got crazy, mad, Gumby Gold, and bitches and hoes. Anyway, what's up, InRev crew? I was just checking out the Wikipedia page on phone freaking and noticed that in the famous phone freak section, there's some guy named Insane Freak. Who the hell is that? I know there's some of the most skilled freaks are fairly unknown and on the internet, but is this guy for real? I'd appreciate any insight that you might have. My gut hunch is that he's just some noob vandalizing Wikipedia. Yotch. Well, I, as soon as I got this email and read it, I was like, oh, I don't know who he is. So I checked up the Wikipedia page, and he is not there. So judging from the fact that it's been deleted already, I think it was a defacement. That or, you know, Yotch took it upon himself to dispense justice. Also, I Googled the name, and if I remember correctly, I think I read a couple of places that he was like 13. So, and he was somewhere in the United States. So I'm thinking that he's just a little kid who has some delusions of grandeur that wants to get his name on Wikipedia.
Yeah, sounds about right. There's a lot of those around there.
Who is the phone freak? Who is a phone freak and hackers?
Phone freak and hackers.
It wasn't he like, you know, I forget his Uber 31337 handle.
Yeah, I don't remember as
phone master freak or something. I don't know. I'm sure we'll get mail on that.
Oh, definitely.
Crap, that's really going to drive me nuts. I'm going to have to look it up on Wikipedia when we're done.
Yeah, we're probably going to get bitched at for not knowing that.
Yeah. Ghost freak. Ah, crap. Damn it. this is really going to drive me batty. All right, well, that sort of wraps it up for the email this week. So, let's go into show and tell. What have you been doing?
Well, I've been working on a couple of projects with Verbal, actually. We're revamping the mentor program, making that a nice little web page people can go to.
Ooh, we're actually going to get a web page.
Yeah,
all right.
All there.
What do you have the email address for the mentor program handy?
What is it? Mentorship@binrev.com, I think.
I think that sounds right. I wasn't 100% sure. It was like either mentors or mentorship, and I think it's mentorship.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah. So if you have, you know, you want to have like a sort of a big brother type thing, you know, email Verbal, he'll hook you up. There's volunteers,
oh,
and if you're willing to donate some time, which technically he's always been pressuring me into, but I just haven't had the time for him, sadly enough.
Well, you know, I've taken on a couple mentorees, but none of the ones I've gotten have had the time to devote to actually learn. They've been, you know, just around a little bit and then blowing me off. That's, yeah,
ouch.
Kind of shitty, you know. I got a lot to teach them, but definitely.
Well,
there's
the
a need for both mentors and mentorees, you know, if y'all...
Understudy. Mentorees? I don't think
hey,
that's...
Hey, I get that word from Verbal, so...
Oh, really? Okay. Okay, maybe I'm wrong.
Take that up with him.
I don't speak the good English, maybe.
Otherwise, though. Yeah, I don't know what email address it is. I think it's mentorship@binrev.com. I was just looking that up.
Well, we'll just leave it at that. And if that fails, either, you know, email radio@binrev.com,
yeah.
We'll hook you up. Anything else or just the mentorship program?
That's pretty much it for right now, other than work-related stuff, which...
Oh, work-related.
Yeah.
Damn work. Taking my copious free time away from me.
So what have you been working on?
The hell. Well, I took a vacation from work for a couple of days because, yeah, it was quite nice. And I sat down and I fixed all the, you know, rotting pile of code that was the Apple. So, yapl.org, www.yapl.org, you know, stop by, submit some payphones. It should all be up running, and all the errors that you possibly got in the past couple of months should be fixed now. And I think... Okay, I'm actually going to go on a rant here. For those of you who remember, we had Yapl by phone, which was essentially you called up an 800 number from a telephone, and it added it to the website. And you could, like, it put it in a little special area of the website where you could fill in, like, where the location was and all the details that it couldn't get from the telephone number. But then all of a sudden, new phone decided to, you know, really piss off its telephone provider and all of the 800 numbers were lost, and I was like, oh, okay. And I mean, I was technically my problem was I was supposed to be able to keep my phone number. So I said, okay, you know, I want to transfer them. And then they said, oh, okay, well, we need to go send you this form. You need to go get this form, fax it back to us, and then sign it. And so we'll sign it, then fax it back to us, of course. But and I was just like, I don't have the time for this. You know, the whole marriage thing and everything. But So, I finally sat down today, and I actually had to recharge, finally, my new phone account. I think I put, tossed $20 at it, right toward the beginning of when I started doing BinRev again, or BinRev the first time, and it finally actually, I got down to, 69 cents. So I was like, fine, I'll toss some more money at it. And I said, okay, well, I'm logged in, I'm here, I might as well just get the 800 number, and I'll try to set up free Apple by phone again. And previously to this, they used to just charge. 800 numbers were free through NewPhone, except for the fact that when someone called you, you would pay 2 cents a minute. Now they charge you $2.50 a month, plus the 2 cents a minute. Technically, I still think that's a good deal compared to a lot of other providers out there. But I'm just like, what the hell?
Did they email you or anything saying they were going to charge at $2.50 or?
I don't remember. I might have gotten it, or it might have actually gotten classified as spam, but.
Yeah.
And it was a rude shock, and I was dismayed. So now I'm, basically what it boils down to is Apple by phone worth $2.50 a month for me here?
Well, it should be, is it?
I don't know. Please, if you want, there you go. Maybe we'll have an ad right at the beginning where you send you send me $2.50 via PayPal. And I'll make a little rotating ad thing. Apple by phone brought to you this month by what's it on the talkie party line? goldnugget.com or something?
Something like
online gambling. I'll get roiled through the voice. We'll be elite like that.
Yeah, you definitely should set up some kind of donation thing for that. Hell.
Now I see my opinion is I'm willing to eat the cost of it. Whatever. Technically, the server is actually owned by StankDog. It's actually hosted on the BinRev server.
Yeah.
And, it was low traffic enough with the Apple by phone, and I actually used it enough that, it would cost me, 1 cent per use.
Yeah.
But because it was basically said, okay, I got your phone stuff. Here, I'm submitting to the database. Okay, here's your tracking number. Goodbye. And that was it. There was no interaction to it. And I think it would take about 30 seconds. So it was, 1 cent per use,
yeah.
Literally.
Well, hey, do you know how many people actually use Yapple?
We just passed 3,500 phones, thanks to Isolation X, I believe, was the person that put us over.
Cool.
So shout out to Isolation X.
Yeah, I haven't been there in a while, but it's pretty neat.
It's nice. It's a fun thing. I'm essentially suffering from knot theory syndrome. it's like Bell's Mind. I'm there and it's working and I'm like, man, there's so much more fun stuff I could do with it, but I don't have the free time to do it.
Yeah,
so
definitely. I've been waiting for him to get Freak Factor back up. I like that show.
Well, you may be pleasantly surprised with the next couple of months.
Yeah, I hope so.
Who knows? I think we've been actually saying that for a couple of months, but. Yeah, we love you, Not Theory. Don't get all pissed off at us. But I've seen some stuff, and oh boy, does it look cool. We'll just leave it at that because I don't think I can say much else.
Well, that's cool.
All right. Well, so technically this is your show this evening, and I'll just kind of sit back into the passenger seat here while you drive. So what is our main topic tonight?
Well, I think our main topic is .NET.
What?
Yeah, .NET, this...
Well, fuck. I guess I'll put the notes on, how to own MySpace away.
Oh, shit.
All right, if you want
to
talk about .NET, that's fine.
Why don't you email me those notes?
All right.
I'd like to own MySpace. That'd be cool. Okay.
Not to actually rag on 2600, but there was an article in there, how to own MySpace, and it was sort of like, here, well, just look at all the MySpace profiles and try to figure out the personal sites question. And I was like, that doesn't work out. that's just lame.
Wow, I can't.
I could have told you that.
Yeah, I can't believe they actually put that in there. That's funny.
Yeah. Well, it's just looking through different eyes, and possibly someone didn't understand that. So, whatever. Anyway, on the .NET.
So, well, let's start this off.
Let's start off first here. What is .NET?
Well, .NET is a framework per se. It's something that sits on top of Windows, which allows you to code for a pseudo language, basically a pseudo computer. It's an API which allows you to interface with the computer indirectly. Your different programming languages actually compile out to something called MISL or CIL, which is an assembly language, basically, which is abstract from the actual computer, which allows you to port that over to different types of systems like WinCE, Pocket PC, stuff like that. So it's pretty much just a framework you can use from a different bunch of different languages, which allow you to do a lot of neat stuff, you know, programming.
Well, but I mean, technically, I can write code on Windows and have it, you know, port over to a Pocket PC, like, you know, like my, to say my cell phone, which is runs Windows Mobile 5, or I don't know, I think it actually works on, like, you know, Windows XP embedded as well.
Yep, exactly. Yep. You got to use the compact version of the Windows framework, of the .NET framework for that, which is pretty neat, you know. It's kind of taking an idea from Java there, you know, compile once, run everywhere. But, yeah, you know, it provides a lot of usability, you know. You can program in .NET and then interface ASP.NET to use that code from a web interface, or you can run an application on Windows CE or on Windows. And if you actually use Mono instead of Microsoft's implementation, you could run it on Linux, you know, the same set of code. Yeah.
So I can actually take code, compile it on Windows, and then take my little binary and, like, forward it over to my Linux box and do I have to, like, decompile it or anything, or do I just, like, run it directly through Mono and then...
Exactly.
You know.
You can run it right from Mono if you develop it using Mono. You have to do that, though, you know. But that's pretty cool. I mean, it's definitely a very diverse thing you can do like that, you know.
Well, I think it's pretty interesting. I mean, so what exactly is Mono?
Well, Mono is an implementation of the .NET framework for Linux, actually. Well, for different Unix environments, not just Linux. It runs on FreeBSD, Solaris, a bunch of other ones.
Now, actually, if I remember correctly, .NET actually, there was like .NET 1.0 for FreeBSD before Mono, correct? Or?
Yeah, that's right. Microsoft actually funded a project to develop .NET on FreeBSD. I think they still do.
Really? I mean, I didn't actually see it for like 2.0 or whatever their 3.0 is. But, damn, Microsoft, not giving the Linux love here.
Yeah, no, just FreeBSD. Which, hey, you know, that's good enough. I mean, hey, you don't expect...
Well, I mean, FreeBSD is nice, but I don't run FreeBSD because I'm lame. No.
Neither do I. I use pretty much Windows. Sorry, guys. Windows is for me.
Hey, you know, I won't knock people for running Windows. I mean, there's no, it's whatever you're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
If you can run Windows and you can run it, I mean, I run Windows. I can run it decently. I can run myself secure. But at the same, I mean, you just—it's the attitude that you have approaching it. It's not—you don't have to be as, unless you're Richard Stallman, which is just a different, completely different thing to go about.
Yeah, I'm looking into this right now. Wikipedia.org, of course. It does not look like they're continuing the FreeBSD project anymore.
Oh, that's lame.
Yeah, but that was pretty neat. Microsoft is really opening up the world of programming with .NET. I think, you know, being able to program for all these different environments with the same coding language, you know.
Well, it's cool because I think Microsoft's I think Microsoft's viewpoint on Mono is okay. Yeah, that's cool, but you know, we're going to focus over here. Don't expect any help from us.
Exactly. Well, you know, they published the standards. CIL, the common language.
Where'd they run it through, that ECM, EMCA?
Yeah, some bullshit.
EIEIO?
A bunch of letters there.
Yeah, and basically there's two portions of it, and what Mono is kind of implementing is there's the standardized portion of it, and then there's, like, the Microsoft-specific portions of it. And I think Mono's goal, well, Mono is very easily implementing all these standard calls that are standardized when they're kind of trying to reverse engineer all of the Microsoft proprietary stuff. Like, for example, I mean, I can call certain things and have it run flawlessly on Mono, but I believe up until recently, actually, I think they just released it, I couldn't, like, call the Windows Forms library, which would be like, you know, maximize this window, create a window on the screen and draw it this way.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
The languages themselves compile out to the CIL, like I talked about a second ago,
mm-hmm.
which is a published standard.
CIL or CLI?
CLI. I'm sorry. I'm dyslexic today.
We all have that. I heard it a couple of times, and I was just like, "Is it?" Because I'm still kind of a noobish on this. I mean, I developed for it at work, but I don't enjoy it. we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, but it compiles out to that, which is a published standard. But implementation of the actual framework, like Windows Form Library, you know, that's something Microsoft hasn't opened up. So Mono has their own set of classes and everything you use with .NET. So your system.whatever, like system.environment, for example,
mm-hmm.
they have to totally implement that themselves in Mono to interface with the Linux environment or the Unix environment.
Man, it'd be great if actually, like, you know, Microsoft sat down and actually, like, ported some of that stuff, because that would just be...
Right.
That'd be awesome, I got to say. I mean, you know, everyone's trying to say, oh, you know, Microsoft bad, but if they did that, I'd be like, oh, good, props to you there. I give them shouts on BinRev.
Mono's doing pretty good, though. The Windows framework's coming along great. You can do a lot of the standard controls and everything right in Linux. And that's
I think, if I remember correctly, Mono, Windows is up to .NET 2.0.
Exactly, yep.
And Mono is up to
1.1. Well, 1.1 framework. Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
so they're a bit behind, especially with 3.0 coming out soon.
Dude, they're going to be two major revisions behind. It's going to suck.
Yeah. I like Mono, and I like the idea of it. But to be practical, it's not very good to use, you know? People try to tell you it's okay to use, but if you're going to be doing a lot of GUI work and stuff like that, you're going to have to use Glade, GTK+.
Well, I mean, Mono and .NET is a good concept. It's just the problem is that Microsoft's working on it, so
yeah.
It sucks.
Yep.
I mean, I program it at work, and I do enjoy it. It makes when you sit down and you install, you know, Visual Studio. Or actually, we'll cover Sharp Develop later. But you know, you sit down and you install it. It is a breeze. I mean, I was a whip behind the ears, straight out of college programmer, who hadn't really actually sat down and coded anything more than, like, you know, a toy application for a class assignment
right.
ever.
Right.
And, like, you know, literally. And I sat down and I stupidly picked Visual Basic, but let's not go into that. Actually, this actually brings up an interesting point. I coded out, and I coded a complete Visual Basic application that was all database-driven, and, I mean, everyone, the people that I coded for just absolutely ate it up, and they loved it. And I was just like, oh, wow, I guess this kind of does make it easy. But, you know, getting back to that is, I mean, Visual Basic and, we'll say, what is it, C-sharp and... What's this, like, J-sharp, and then there's C++. Does C++ actually run on .NET, or is it just...
Yeah, it actually does run on .NET. Mono...
Okay.
Excuse me. Managed C++, which...
Yeah, managed, that's the word I'm looking for.
Which is a total fucking waste. Excuse my language, sorry.
And, I mean, technically, I can take my Visual Basic code, and I'm actually rewriting this in the C#. I've learned my lesson.
Yeah.
And... I mean, the logic is all there, and it's just, I mean, it's easy enough to actually look at it, and, you know, it calls all the same libraries, so translating between language, there's actually programs out there that'll take a Visual Basic program and translate it into C#, and I played with it, I played with one of these programs, and I ran, like, a 1,000-line simple Visual Basic application that I had, and it did a pretty good job, I will say. I mean, I had to go in and clean up a couple of things, but they highlighted all the errors saying, well, okay, I mean, you didn't do this in Visual Basic because it really Visual Basic doesn't need it, but you need to do this in C#, so fix this line right here.
Yeah.
like not actually saying a couple of my functions didn't return a didn't actually specify a return type. So.
Oh, jeez, man, that's bad coding.
I was stupid. I will admit this program sucks, and that's why I'm sitting down and I'm sitting down in a C#, and I'm designing it correctly.
Oh, that's good. That's good. But it actually converted from VB.net or old VB.
VB.net and over to C#.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, those are pretty good programs. I've used several of them. It's pretty cool because you can go out and find source code for whatever .NET language and convert it to your own.
Yeah, like, for example, this actually should have been a giant blinking red light for me, but when I was looking for certain things while I was coding in VB.NET, a couple of things over there were in C#, and I said, well, okay, well, this is how you do it in C#, but I can probably translate and do this all in Visual Basic, and, yeah, all the examples out there were in C#, but I translated over to VB, and should have been, like I said, big red warning light saying, don't use VB, but no, VB's easy.
VB is. It's got all the power of C# pretty much, but...
But C# is just, like, so much better. It's not as brain-dead.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to take that away from you. I love C#, but for work and everything, I use VB.net.
Don't admit that, really. Just...
Hey, it's got all the power of C#, you know? It's got that fancy my keyword. C# doesn't have that, does it? In 2005?
I think there's a couple of ways of duplicating behavior. Actually, the one thing I like about VB that's not in C# is the with command.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's something I miss. There's a couple of ways to kind of duplicate the, you know, logic behind it, but it just doesn't do it go as well as you want.
Yeah, definitely does.
All right, so we're talking about programming here.
Programming.
And, I mean, we're talking about Visuals. Do you use Visual Studio at work?
Every day, yep. Visual Studio.
Yep, okay, so there's like, what is it? There are like three or I think right now there's four versions of that support .NET.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Which is Visual Studio .NET, right?
Yeah.
And then there's .NET 2003, Visual Studio .NET 2003. Mm-hmm. And then there's Visual Studio 2005, which just came out, and that's the current version, which is really nice. And
really nice.
I think we talked right after it came out, Nottheory and I talked about it on BinRev. So I think the episode is called Visual Studio 2005 Doesn't Suck.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. You got to love those little guidelines and stuff.
Yeah. And actually, I think they just released it to the public for beta is Visual Studio 2007, which I believe is codenamed Orcas or Ocras. Oh, if I remember correctly, it's O-R-C-A-S.
Okay.
Or it could be O-C-R-A-S, but I don't remember. It's Visual Studio 2007. Google it. I think it's probably on there.
Yeah, Orca sounds about right, actually.
Yeah. And that's just out. And I don't think they've actually released a binary for it. They've only released a, what do they call their, like a VMware image, but it's Microsoft's version, so it's like virtual PC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Have you messed with that at all?
No. I've seen it and I've said, "Oh, okay. I'll mess with it when I have free time." And yeah, right.
Exactly right. Yeah, I hear that. Well, anyway.
Okay. So, oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh no, you can go ahead. Fuck it. You're doing good.
All right. All these are free, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, no, all these are not free. I mean, yeah.
Not free.
Yeah.
They're not that expensive though. You can get student edition for like $60. They have a express version of Visual Studio out there. Well, a Visual C# and Visual Basic, which is free. You can use those for Windows.
Yeah, I think there's four versions. There's Express Edition, C++, C#,
yeah.
Web Developer, and something else. I forget.
Right, and those are free. That's a good step by Microsoft, by the way.
Free as in beer. Free as in beer.
Ooh, free as in beer.
Yeah, well, we'll just leave it at that. So, I mean, you can download it, you can run it on Windows, and you can develop with that. However, with the 2005, that uses .NET 2.0.
Yep.
And we'll cover the versioning later, but you can't compile something into Mono on 2.0 yet.
No, you cannot.
All right. What else is there for? There's a free as in speech IDE, or is that just free to download?
Sorry, say that again?
There's another free IDE, Sharp Developer.
Oh, yeah,
or
right.
Sharp something?
Yeah, Sharp Develop.
Okay, I've never actually used that,
so
what is that?
Yeah, it runs on Windows, and I think it runs on Linux as well. It's pretty cool. It's modeled after Visual Studio 2003,
mm-hmm.
and it compiles using Mono or Visual Studio's compiler, which comes with .NET Framework. So that, it's pretty neat. It's, like I said, modeled after Visual Studio, so you get all your little gadgets and everything. But it's free, so that's good. It was developed before the Express versions of Visual Studio were made public and everything. So if you're going to develop on Windows, I would go with mm-hmm. Express versions. But
okay, so does Sharp Develop do 1.0, 1.1, 2.0, whatever? What version of .NET does it compile for?
1.0 and 1.1.
Okay, so technically, you know, you can write something in Sharp Develop and then more or less port it over to Linux?
Exactly, yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I got to say, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. Like I think I said earlier, though, if you're going to develop with Mono, you got to... It's best to start developing with Mono instead of porting it over, because you got to use their specific framework and everything. They have some minor differences between Windows versions and their versions, which you have
to be
aware of. So.
Okay, but when you're talking about developing in Mono, does Mono have an IDE, or is it all VI? And
well, Mono has Mono Develop, which is pretty nice. I haven't used it too much because I'm not a Linux developer. Have you used it?
I think I touched upon it once or twice, and it seemed okay. It's very much on par with Sharp Develop and Visual Studio 2003.
Yeah.
I mean, when you pop into Visual Studio 2005 or any version of it, Express or one of the commercial versions, it's the difference is night and day, very much so.
Definitely.
I think anyone who's worked with both of them will agree with me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we're talking about the Visual Studio. You said there was a Visual Studio compiler that Sharp Develop can use?
Yeah. It can use it comes with the .NET framework, the same one Visual Studio uses, so...
So I'm just downloading the .NET framework, like 2.0 or something,
mm-hmm.
and I get a compiler for it?
Yep, it comes right with the framework. It's called VC, I think, .exe, and that's your Visual C# compiler.
So it just does C# work, or does it, can I feed a VB code?
Yep,
or?
There's all of them. It comes with compilers for VB.NET and C#. Which is pretty neat. So you can open up Notepad, make your own code, and then go into Command Prompt and compile it all right into an EXE.
Well, I gotta give Microsoft props for that. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Good for them.
Yeah. That was a big step, but now that they have the Express versions of Visual Studio out, a lot of that's pretty much null and void.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they're actually, and that was kind of the start of it, is Microsoft is kind of embracing the hobbyist movement.
Exactly.
And they're actually saying, wow, well, these people actually write code, and we've been ignoring them forever, so let's actually go release stuff.
Right. I think the big part of that was they wanted people to adopt .NET, though. Everybody, all the developers, to help push .NET forward.
Yeah. Well, that our segues into our next thing. So we're talking about .NET 1.0 and 1.1 and 2.0, and then there's I think there is a 3.0 coming out
soon when
Vista comes out. So,
mm-hmm.
so what are the major differences between them?
Well, between 1.0 and 1.1, pretty much they just fixed the framework where there were some minor problems and everything.
They fixed all the problems in 1.0 and called it 1.1.
Exactly. They added...
1.1 is .NET 1.0 Service Pack 1.
Exactly. That's pretty much all it is.
Microsoft.
They added a couple of things to the languages, though, like VB 2003, they called it, supported bit shifting, finally. Well, it's the first time VB had that. So that was good.
Oh, that's something I was unaware of.
Yeah. That was good. But pretty much 1.0 and 1.1 are the same. Just minor fixes. 2.0 was a big upgrade, though. They optimized a lot of the drawings, your controls and everything. So that they introduced double buffering to it pretty much, which allows your controls and everything to look a lot better on the screen. They introduced a lot of things to the languages, and that's where the framework mainly changed.
And also, when we're talking about, like, you know, looking nice and different things that they added, like, there's, I mean, .NET on the Microsoft side of things, when you're talking about your system, your forms libraries, there's, like, you know, a thing called, okay, put a dialog box here, or put a text box here, or make a menu here. And one of the things that I desperately wanted at work that I kind of hacked up my own one when I was using .NET 1.1 was a box where I could say, you know, take input from a user and have it so it's like, you know, --\, --\, --\, and then just use that and always make sure that they input that correctly. And actually, they didn't have that in 1.1 or 1.0, but they finally gave it to us in 2.0, thank God.
They added a lot of different controls and everything to 2.0, which is really nice. One of the things I liked that they added to 2.0 was the web browser control. I don't know if you remember that from back in the day, but it's pretty much an ActiveX control which allows you to use IE's rendering for web pages, which is nice to embed in a lot of different types of applications and everything. But
I wonder how IE7 affected that. That's an interesting question.
You know, that is a good question. I don't know.
Perhaps someone in our audience will know.
Perhaps.
All right. So, and now, do you know what 3.0 is? Because I'm kind of vague on it, but I do kind of know the basics.
Well, you know, I've always been up and fresh on the new Microsoft news and everything until recently. I got a damn job. It's taken all my time.
Damn it.
I don't really
damn jobs.
Yeah, I really don't know.
Damn jobs sending us their paychecks. Oh, life would be so much simpler if they just sent us the paychecks with us working.
Yeah.
They dangle them like carrots.
So, no, I don't know too much about it. Like I told you before, I've messed with XAML a little bit, which is pretty neat. But
Well, from what I've heard and while I understand it, 3.0 is essentially the same way as... technically, in my opinion, I'd call it 2.1 or 2.5 or something because it's a 2.0 framework, and I really don't think they've made any real major changes to it except they've taken out a lot of – because it's designed for Vista. Like, for example, if I remember correctly, I don't think you'll be able to run 3.0 on XP.
Really?
Or I don't know. Unless they might have like some type of, you know, download this and you can, you know, use it on XP or something. But I'm pretty sure it won't run natively.
Yeah.
Microsoft, when they're going to Vistas, they're ditching the, I forget what they call it, MFC. Do you know what MFC stands for? Microsoft?
No, I don't.
Form Control. That's it, I think. I remember correctly.
Microsoft Class Foundation. Well, hold on. What are you talking about? MFC?
MFC?
Is that what
they call it? Yeah, I'm a Windows developer, and I don't know what MFC is, because I'm a .NET baby.
Microsoft Foundation Classes.
Oh, okay. And that's all their basic stuff, and that's basically been running Windows since, I would say, you know, basically Windows, like, 3.1, almost.
Yeah.
Like, they kind of, like, actually, I think it came really kind of introduced in Windows 95 and Windows NT 4. But they kind of popped it back to Windows NT 3.5. But that's been having all like the basic form classes and all like, you know, the nitty gritty stuff that's been running Windows. And with Vista, I think they're finally trashing that because it's been around for 11 years at least. And they are going over to something called Windows Presentations Foundations. And I really don't know what it consists of, but essentially it makes, you know, making, you know, really pretty forms a whole lot easier, and it's the latest and greatest thing according to Steve Ballmer. But
yeah,
essentially what they're doing is 3.0 is 2.0 minus all the MFC stuff that they might have to call on, plus Windows Presentation Foundation.
Yeah, that sounds close to right, close enough anyway. Did you know they released WPF? Windows Presentation Foundation for Windows XP, though?
I heard that someplace, but I think that's the backwards compatibility.
Exactly.
Thing.
So maybe the...
Have they actually released it yet, or are they just still doing betas?
Well, I ran the beta. I don't think they released it yet, though, no.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe,
I
will run.
Yeah, my problem is I only have one box I can do development work on, so I'm hesitant to like toss betas onto it without.
Yeah.
Because like all my work's there, and I really don't back it up as much as I should.
Well, hey, that brings us into a topic we've been talking about recently on this show: virtualization.
Mm-hmm. Woohoo!
Well, hey, if you want to try those betas out, run it in a VM.
Yeah. The problem is I don't have a VM that's my computer isn't fast enough to do a good job on VMs, but
oh, that sucks.
Yeah, my computers suck. I will admit, I'm way behind the times, but they work, and I know I'm nice to them, so they putter along.
Huh.
I mean, like my one at work, I can toss like all kinds of crap on there. That's a behemoth. But my desktop at home is very modest because
yeah.
I don't, you know, whatever.
Well,
I go for diversity. I have a laptop, I have a desktop, and I just don't try to put all my eggs in one basket.
That's what I've got too. My home computer is pretty good, but I got it for free, so you can't beat that.
Oh yeah, that's essentially what I got this one for. I got the motherboard and the processor for free. And I had I bought another hard drive for it. It was very much a cobbling thing. And I think I sucked all the RAM out of my old computer. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I mean, is there? So I want to go program in .NET, and I have my Visual Studio 2005 or my Sharp Develop or my Mono Develop. I mean, how easy is it? Is there any caveats I should be looking for? Is there any I mean, is it garbage collected? What's the memory management look like? If my program is running 100 megabytes in, the task manager, should I be worried?
Well, those are all good questions, which
yes.
They all relate to one thing, the garbage collection, like you said.
Okay.
When you load a .NET application, if you look at task manager, for instance, you'll notice that it's using a lot of memory, and people are like, hey, no, that's not good. Look, it's using, 100 megabytes, and I just opened it. It's a simple form application, They tend to freak out about that. And
from what I've noticed in 1.1, I bring up, a single form application, the usage jumped to, 20 megs.
Exactly, right, which what that is that's loading all the .NET framework and
mm-hmm.
all that information and compiling your code into the native CPU language. And it makes the size of your application like 20 megs. But if you'll notice, if you minimize that window, which actually forces a GC cleanup, which we'll get to that in a second, the size of your application will actually drop down to like 500 kilobytes in memory. But anyway, yes, it's garbage collected. So anytime you create an instance of an object or something like that, you don't have to worry about calling delete or anything like that or free up the memory.
Mm-hmm.
.NET automatically does that for you. It'll dispose of the memory whenever it's not referenced to anymore or whenever it needs the memory to allocate.
Well, that's always not true. I mean, there's a couple of times where they've actually said, if you do things certain ways, you'll actually run into issues like that, because certain times when you actually have when you create a bunch of small objects and try to roll them into a larger object, there's data tables and then there's a set of data tables. If you create a bunch of smaller data tables and roll them into one data set, if you don't actually properly dispose of the data tables, you're hosed.
Yeah, definitely. You do have problems like that, which,
yeah.
That sucks, but hey,
it's for the greater good. That's the joys of garbage collection.
Mm-hmm. It's really nice having it manage your memory for you, though. Like you said, sometimes you get hosed by it, and it's not like C memory management. Because that's fucking crazy, malloc and free all the time, and you gotta keep track of it yourself, and oh boy, that's no fun.
In getting back to that, I mean, technically, a lot of people complain of, I'm doing it this way and it's taking up gobs of memory. I mean, the solution is don't do it that way, but at the same point, you shouldn't be doing it that way in the first place.
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Garbage collections, for all of its cons, there's a lot of pros. And the pros outweigh the cons.
Oh, definitely, definitely. You got to be aware of how you're using your memory and where you're allocating your objects and how they're getting destroyed and all that. But you know, at the same time, you've got to beware of any kind of memory management you do in any language. And having it manage that for you just takes a big load off your mind when you're programming.
Exactly. All right, so we're talking about, like, you know, we've been talking about cross-compatibility, and, you know, you can run it on Windows, and then you can take it, you can run it through Mono on Linux, and you can port it over. I bet all of our Java diehards out there, all of our CS majors, are going, oh, geez, I can do this in Java. Why can't I just use Java? What's the main difference between .NET and Java?
Well, the main difference that I know of in .NET and Java is the JIT, the just-in-time compiling. .NET actually caches what it compiles, and from what I know of, Java does not. Java actually compiles it every time it runs and everything, which makes it a lot slower than .NET.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not very good, you know? Makes your application slower and everything. Another good thing about .NET over Java is that, the .NET framework itself is made with .NET, so if you're ever making a call to an object or something that you don't completely understand, you can use a program called .NET Reflector and actually open up the framework and look at the code of whatever you're calling, which is pretty neat.
And that's actually, I mean, I think that's built right into all versions of Video Studio, if I remember correctly, that you can actually, you know, pull up everything. And one of the plus about .NET in general is, because it's maintained by Microsoft, and Microsoft is very hardcore on documentation. Like, you can, like, go to everything's an MSDN, Microsoft Developers Network.
Right.
And if you haven't run into this and you work for Windows and you work on Windows, you're missing something. And I mean, a lot of the stuff out there is like they'll show you how objects are compiled and how you're supposed to call them and how you're supposed to substantiate them and all,
exactly.
You know, all of that stuff. And they do a really good job with that.
They do a great job.
Yeah, I mean, all of that stuff in there. And actually, I believe there's actually a operating system. I mean, you started talking about frameworks and, you know, looking inside of them, and that just kind of caused a light bulb to go over my head, where I believe actually Microsoft is writing an operating system in .NET, like back down to the nitty-gritty, like, you know, bootloaders and all that stuff. And I think they call it Singularity, if I remember correctly. I don't have a link for that handy, but perhaps I'll have put it in the accounting the housekeeping for next show.
Yeah, I haven't actually heard of that. The only thing I've heard of like that is like a WinCE type device, which has a processor which executes MSIL directly.
That is pretty damn cool. I haven't heard of that. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I don't have any links for that myself right now, but I can pull that up. Maybe we can put that in the show notes or something.
Perhaps. Well, we can put it in the... If you mail that to me, I can go put it in the show for next time. And, I mean, we're talking about Java and just-in-time compiling, and I personally, this is my own personal opinion, despite all of its shortcomings, is .NET is Java done right.
Yeah.
I mean, Java was kind of shooting for, you know, cross-compatibility and, you know, runs on everything, which, you know, is a very admirable thing. Problem is, you have to have Java installed and run it through this program. I mean, it's not as much as, I mean, okay, let's try this from the beginning again. you know, when you compile something in Java, you have to run it through the Java runtime environment, and that's a program running on top of your operating system. It's a program running a program on top of your OS.
Exactly.
The one thing I like about .NET is that it's still a bunch of libraries. And, I mean, technically you have the whole, you know, MSIL compiler, but it's a lot more stripped down, and I don't feel like it's thrashing my system when I start it up. I mean, I bet all the Java diehards are going, oh, it's the same thing, but I personally could be completely wrong on this, is I don't think it is, and I think it's a lot better done than Java. I have no qualms about installing Mono on my system. Java, when I see a Java app, I'm like, ugh. I see it's a Mono, I'm like, oh. Of course, there's only, like, you know, 10 applications actually written in Mono, but we won't get into that. But those 10 applications are very well done.
Yes, they are.
And I have no problem running them on my system.
Yeah.
And I think, like, one of them is an MP3 player. And it's the stereotypical Linux programs. Like, oh, you know, we have We have one we have one or two office suites, but we have 15 billion MP3 players.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So, .NET, use it.
Yeah, use it. It's good.
I mean, a lot of people are going to, like, you know, back off because it's Microsoft, and, you know, back off because Microsoft supports it. But I have no complaints with it. I like it. I use it at work.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you ever hang out in the BinRev IRC channel, and, you know, irc.binrev.net, /binrev, you'll see me, like, you know, 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. Eventually you'll see me, like, start typing in capitals, "Oh, I can't believe this stupid Microsoft piece of crap," but...
You know, it's perfect. I mean, a lot of other languages like C and C++ can do cross-platform programming, but at the same time, it's kind of awkward to do that in those languages. And as far as actually productivity in those languages, it's definitely a lot slower than .NET programming, because .NET has all these classes and all this framework, and you get all this documentation along with it, which... You know, it helps you. You just code so much faster, and everything's simple. You know? That sounds like the only intelligent thing I've said today. I've been kind of out of it. I got a cold. I feel like shit. But...
Turning in this sort of default radio episode. Oh, you know, I feel like crap, Lucky. Oh. I'm not making fun of Decoder. Please don't send a hate mail. I'll send shouts out to Decoder. Anyway, announcements. You know, we'll plug the mentorship program again. We're always looking for big brothers and little brothers on there, you know, and not in the homosexual way. I'm pretty sure it's mentorship@binrev.com. So,
yeah.
we'll and if that, you know, if you can't get to it, find a way. Post on the forums. We'll find you. I believe verbal help at. Helps admin IRC for us, so, you know, pop yourself over in /binrev, and he's usually there. Leave him a message. Or if you see Kyle L., you know, just, hey, go. That's his handle.
Yep.
Shouts. Do you have any shouts?
Well, not really. I guess I'll give shouts to Verbal, though, because I've been working with him quite a bit lately, you know, working on his mentor program and stuff. Been talking to Stank a little bit recently. He's a pretty cool guy. Other than that, you know.
Well, of course, Stank is cool. Stankness is the epitome of coolness.
Yep. Well, hey, how about this? Shouts to you, Ratchet, man.
Oh, well. Gee, thank you.
Yeah. I stood you up.
I feel loved.
Recording the show before, though. Sorry about that, you know.
For those of you who don't know, Kyle L. stiffed me. If you ever, the radio show that was the Wawina episode, where I basically dialed in and played the... Wawina 2600 line for like an entire episode. Yeah, that was supposed to be this episode. The .NET episode was supposed to be that episode.
Yeah, this episode doesn't sound too much better, but hey, at least I came.
Hey, I think we did a pretty good job covering everything.
Well, I don't know about that.
I'm sure there's great gaps of loss of information, but
yo,
whatever.
Definitely, but hey.
It's been Rev Radio. We don't know what the fuck we're doing. Neil sent shouts out to /binrev, and I sent some shouts out earlier to other people that I completely forget because I didn't write them down.
Hey, Decoder.
So shouts out to those people again. I sent shouts out to Decoder, and I believe I sent shouts out to the guy who wrote Vector.
I don't know
somebody. Site of the week. Verbal actually pointed this out in the IRC channel when I was looking for a site of the week. Is www.google.com/A. That's it, alpha A, one letter. And it's like Google Talk and Google all kinds of other stuff and Gmail all branded for your site. And it's all free, and Verbal's been playing around with it, and he says it's pretty cool. So we'll toss that endorsement out there, and if it sucks and you don't like it, take it up with Verbal. It's not our fault. And then ask him about the mentorship program.
Yeah, definitely ask him about that, you know. Yep. You need more people in it.
Email radio@binrev.com. You know, send us an email if we've missed something, or we sent a couple of questions out there to the audience tonight, so that's where you should email them to.
Yeah.
And our closing music tonight is Transmission by Fast, and I picked this up off of, I don't know where I picked this up off of, it's free streaming off the internet, so no copyright issues there. And, as always, we will just see you next week, same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Broadcasting First Transmission. Casting first transmission.